That means you, Representative Croft. This board, in a way, you can't see if everybody's here or not. In accordance with the provisions of Uniform Rule 51, I turn the gavel over to the President of the Senate, the Honorable Ben Stevens.
Thank you. The joint session will come to order. The purpose of the joint session is to hear the State of the Budget addressed by the Honorable Frank Murkowski, Governor of the State of Alaska. Thank you, Senator Stevens.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call of the Senate be waived and all members be shown as present.
Without objection, so ordered. Thank you, Representative Coghill.
Mr. President, I also move that the roll call vote of the House be waived and all members be shown as present.
Thank you. Without objection, so ordered. Would Senator Stedman and Representative Thomas please escort the Governor of the State of Alaska?
Ladies and gentlemen, the Governor of the great state of Alaska, the Honorable Frank Murkowski.
Mr. Speaker, I notice you have the air conditioning on in here tonight. It's much more comfortable. I hope the rest of you have air conditioning too, because unlike most of the opportunities to address you in the state of the state where we combine the budget message, the complications of state government have simply dictated that we'd probably be in here 2 or 3 hours if I tried to combine both the state of the state and the budget. But I should warn you now, you're in for a fair share of detail. And hopefully you'll find it rewarding and enlightening. And this is the first time I've done this kind of back-to-back, that we've only had one day. So I share with you your indulgence, because we are going to cover a lot of material tonight. First, let me acknowledge my wife, Nancy, my cabinet, my chief of staff. We have some of our troopers here tonight, and I'll be introducing some special guests a little later on. Mr. Lieutenant Governor, I welcome you, and members of the legislature. I look forward to this year ahead of us, because we have the responsibility of running the largest domiciled business in the state of Alaska. And when I get through this budget, you'll appreciate the complexities of it and the enormous responsibility associated with it, because we are emerging into the time frame of generating substantial revenues, and obviously we have a significant responsibility in how those revenues are spent. Tonight, I'd like to thank you for your strong support of the priorities of this administration. Adding to Alaska's transportation infrastructure with the approval of last year's capital budget, which relieved significant congestion in the Mat-Su Valley. Those of you who traveled up there, I think, recognize there have been some significant improvements made. We want to thank the Department of Transportation, the borough, and others in that area for persevering during the inconvenience of that construction. Congestion also exists in Anchorage, Kenai, Fairbanks. Another area that's of interest, of course, is the commitment towards education, increasing our education funding by over 22% over the last 3 years, and advancing funding in this year's educational budget as well. Another point is, of course, taking care of our schools by approving funds to cover all of the 141 projects on the deferred maintenance list. And I think it's fair to say that in looking around, why we found that this is the first time any legislature stepped forward and met this responsibility. And of course, the longer we wait, the worse it gets. So I commend all of you for the manner in which you came forth to make that happen. Also in the area of assisting small business by approving workers' compensation reform, reforming our employee pension system with the defined contribution plan, streamlining permitting. We moved the Division of Governmental Coordination to the Department of Natural Resources. We modernized the Coastal Zone Management Program. Of course, the list goes on and on. There's more to do, but it's an obligation that I think will streamline our ability to develop our resources. On Tuesday, I shared with you the four main priorities of this administration: building the gas pipeline and reforming the ELF oil taxation system, which not only will transform the North Slope, but also provide increased state revenues to fund essential public services. Those are, of course, developing the state's transportation infrastructure, improving education, both K through 12 and the university. And as I indicated in my State of the State, educating the lower 48 about Alaska's role in the national energy policy. Now, tonight I would like to talk about how the budget, which I presented on December 15th, proposes to finance these priorities. So let me share with you some of the highlights of our administration to date. You know, we moved expeditiously to take control of the reins of state government during our transition period in November of 2002. And for any of you that have been around state government for a while, you know that's quite a step from one administration to the other to get the reins, to get things under control, get the personnel built up, and respond to the needs that are out there. But this successful transition, I think, positioned us for one of the most successful legislative sessions that any first-year Alaska government, or governor for that matter, has experienced. We really hit the ground running. It was exciting. During my campaign for governor, I promised to get this state's stagnant economy moving again. That was creation of good-paying jobs, pursue an aggressive resource development agenda if elected governor. And I think it's fair to say my harshest media critics would have to agree that as governor, I followed through with action on my promises, even though some of them were not particularly politically popular. Our legislative program is one of the most successful of any first-term governors. We passed more than 100 governor's bills in our first three sessions. This is significantly more than recent administrations. Most of these were significant items: regulatory reform, retirement reform, workers' compensation. And finally, we have recruited one of the most talented and skilled cabinets in Alaska history. This includes my entire third floor staff. You'll not find more professional, qualified group anywhere. And I want to thank them. Most of them are here with us tonight. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, ladies. Now, there's no laurels to rest on. We've made our share of mistakes, which I acknowledge. Now, some folks say, well, they don't like our style. Well, I say, look at the state of our state. Look at our results. Consider the roadmap we have put together to use natural resource development to provide a better quality of life for all Alaskans. Now, the budget before us today, my budget, builds upon our past performances as well as our expected achievements. So let me share them with you at this time. Remember last session, we worked together to save $400 million of FY05's increased revenues to help pay for education in FY06 this year. Now, this helped assure educators around Alaska that the money would be there for education. It was the right thing to do, and it worked effectively. Now, we're going to try a little chart demonstration here to give you an opportunity to visualize a little better what the makeup of the additional revenue that I have proposed in this budget is going for. You can see, obviously, advanced funding, K through 12, $565 million. That's the purple part of the chart and the biggest part of the chart. Road access, road projects, $86 million. The proposal to save for gas pipeline ownership, $400 million. And deferred maintenance, $43 million. Now, I think you'll agree that the investment in education, which is a primary obligation of government, is being met by this administration. Now, this will give school districts the opportunity to plan for the upcoming year, knowing the level of support that they can expect. Since K through 12 education is nearly one-third of our operating budget, it is important to get education funding resolved early because it really allows the school districts to focus on delivering instructions, retain an adequate teaching staff, and certainly not waste time developing multiple budget scenarios that simply come and go. There's another area that some of you have had some exposure to see, and I just marvel at the success of the Alaska Military Youth Academy. That's rather unusual, but this is Alaska's only state-run military school. And the results have been, well, they've been awesome. It's one of our very best educational investments ever. And it saves many kids who could otherwise face a future with severe consequences. As a consequence of that, I'm putting $500,000 into the budget to expand the program with a new facility north of the Alaska Range. As we are doing more, as Commissioner Sampson announced yesterday, the area of proposing a school performance initiative program designed to encourage all school personnel and innovative instructions aimed at raising student achievement beyond 1 year of expected growth. Those of you who heard his presentation, I think, were as enthused as I am by his initiative and commitment to innovate. Now, all of this shows the priority that this legislature and this administration working together place on education. How many other states in the union have paid ahead for education or have been as innovative as Alaska? Well, congratulations to you all. Together, I think we have shown what a governor and legislature committed to education can do. We've worked effectively together to improve education by investing in our children and holding the educational system accountable for results. Again, I think it's fair to say that no other first-term administration has done more to advance education. And I'm proud of what we together have done for education over the last 3 years and what more we can do through what I'm proposing in this budget. Now, you notice on the chart there's another proposal. I propose that we save $400 million of the additional revenue and we use that towards our equity share in the gas pipeline. A good question. Why? Well, as part of our negotiations, we have a 20% ownership in the gas and the gas pipeline in exchange for taking our gas in kind. If the gas pipeline costs, say, $20 billion to construct, our share of those costs would be about $4 billion. Our financial advisors have suggested that if we finance 80% of our $4 billion share, this means that we will need some $800 million in cash for our equity requirement. The state will need to put up its funds early to help pay our share of permitting and other construction-related activities within a 60-day period when the gas line contract is ratified. Now, given this, I believe it is prudent that we save the $400 million of the FY06 increased revenue by simply setting it aside for this tremendous investment in Alaska's future. I don't look at this as an expense. I look at it as an investment. An investment that is going to pay handsome, handsome returns. I also mentioned in my State of the State last year that it is important for the state to own a part of the TAPS pipeline. Because the gas pipeline will transform the North Slope and our incentives will increase oil production, and owning a portion of the oil pipeline, in my opinion, is critical for Alaska. That sound familiar? Well, then former Revenue Commissioner Eric Woolforth recently wrote a very interesting op-ed regarding the late Governor Egan's effort in 1974 for Alaska to own part of TAPS. Governor Egan's idea passed the state's House of Representatives that same year, but failed the Senate. Now, we've given copies on your desk so you can peruse at your own leisure the merits of that. But the TAPS pipeline, some of you may have missed it, has recently had its operating permit renewed after a full environmental impact statement has been done by the Bureau of Land Management. It was a 30-year extension, and the state cooperated in that and approved that as well. Now, the state's royalty oil runs about 12.5%. It moves through the pipeline, and the state pays a tariff to TAPS. The state can easily justify acquiring an interest equal to its throughput. Payment for the acquisition cost could come from the tariff adjustment, that differential. Now, the state has been in litigation almost constantly with TAPS owners over tariff disputes, and state ownership could potentially reduce the likelihood of this litigation. It's often joked that among the attorneys, there's several children who've gone on to graduate school as a consequence of the extended litigation. Being the case, I think it's fair to say that initial contacts have been made with the TAPS owners on this matter. There is interest in the proposal, and I think there is every reason to believe that the administration's incentive proposal, production of new fields and heavy oil, that the TAPS line will be in business for another 30 years or more. Now, our negotiating team, the Gas Pipeline Group, will pursue this once they're basically done with their current work and available to negotiate the oil pipeline ownership. But I would urge the committees of jurisdiction, the resource committees, to hold some hearings on this issue as well, because I know Alaskans will have different points of view. I'm also proposing to invest $86 million of our additional FY06 revenue in transportation infrastructure to relieve traffic congestion throughout the state. Good. And I don't know who coined this, but we call it our bottleneck busters transportation initiative that we announced in Anchorage in October of last year. We proposed $97 million in state funding for significant congestion relief projects within Anchorage, Mat-Su, and other areas. Well, it was a good start, but tackling problems that have been built up over many years takes a multi-year solution. The long-range transportation plan for Anchorage was recently completed and contains a 20-year blueprint of needed projects. It's a good plan with good public support. So I'm proposing to jumpstart this partnership with $30 million of state funds and make it a long-term commitment to addressing Anchorage traffic congestion. Now, this will be in addition to the federal funds for the State Transportation Improvement Plan, or the STIP as we know it. As recent news events have reminded us, the Seward Highway, especially between Anchorage and Girdwood, continues to be one of the state's most dangerous stretches of roadway. As a consequence, I have included $12 million to reconstruct the so-called Windy Corner, which will realign this very bad section and add passing lanes as well. Those of you who have driven it know it's not only dangerous because it's heavily traveled, two-lane road, but spotty icing conditions and driver behavior can make it exceptionally dangerous. I've asked the Department of Transportation to install what they call variable message boards and speed limit signs to drivers that will be warned when icing conditions exist and there's a need to slow down. Now, we always have a few drivers that don't pay much attention, so I've directed the state troopers to increase enforcement. Further, I've asked that the Commissioner of the Department of Transportation and Public Safety designate this section of highway as what we call a safety corridor, much like we do work zones. We have penalties for moving traffic violators in this safety corridor, and the fine would be doubled. So we mean business about getting tough. Now, I know Anchorage does not have a monopoly on traffic problems, but it's pretty close to it. The Mat-Su Borough's rapid growth requires immediate attention. And last year, I included funds to start reconstruction of the Palmer-Wasilla Highway. I'm now proposing a $12 million for intersection improvement on that busy road. In addition, I'm also proposing funds to start work on the Big Lake Burma Road so we can be ready for construction in 2008. I'm proposing $8 million to complete paving of the K Beach Road on the Kenai Spur Highway, projects that we started last year. Reaching out to Kodiak, I'm proposing $6 million to complete reconstruction and paving of the road to the Aerospace Corporation's launch facility, because that facility is going to get a lot more action in the coming years. In Fairbanks, I've included $2.5 million for access improvement to the new fire and police facility down in that community in the downtown area so that the emergency vehicles will be able to respond faster and more safely. In addition, I am proposing $6.5 million in funding to continue the repaving of the Richardson Highway south of Fairbanks that we started last summer. In addition, my proposal in the FY07 budget includes $15 million for maintenance of the Dalton Highway. Another $27 million in work on the Dalton is slated for this year as part of our STIP. I'm also exploring the concept with commercial truckers and the Department of Law to see if there's some way that the Dalton Highway fees could go directly back into upgrading and maintenance of the Dalton, which is truly the lifeline of transportation to the North Slope of Alaska. And I would welcome your innovative thoughts on that, because I'm told by many of the truckers that their equity really is in their equipment. And as they pay it down, they'd like to have it in reasonable shape when it's paid off. But if it falls apart at the end, why? So it might have some merit. I'm also proposing $5.4 million for the new Wood River Bridge near Dillingham. Two infrastructure projects that have attracted much attention, much of the nation's attention for that matter, of course, are our two bridges. I want to make it very clear that I support the Kinnick Arm Crossing and the Gravina Island Bridge Crossing. Now, we have some state rules around here, and they're pretty detailed, but our rules prescribe the amount of federal funds we can allocate towards transportation projects in any one year. Now, within this budget, I am proposing we spend the maximum amount for the freed up earmarks that we can on these projects. Now, this means our capital budget will include $94 million for Kinnick Arm, $91 million for the Gravina Bridge, plus the necessary state match. I recognize this is not nearly enough to build these projects, but I want to keep these projects moving. They have the momentum, and it's important that that momentum be maintained. Now, I've asked my budget director to look for additional funding for these projects from future revenue streams. When we have the revenues from our gas line flowing, we will have the ability to underwrite significant portions of these and other mega projects. All combined, our FY07 transportation budget is $1.3 billion, of which $873 million is federal funds. For those who are adding it up, why, I want to make sure you had a chance to catch up. Now, in addition to meeting the transportation needs of the future, the state must maintain projects that have already been built. For far too long, the state's ever-growing list of required maintenance around the state was not addressed. Frankly, it was ignored, and there was a good reason for it. We didn't have the money. Well, the last session, we worked to change that. Your agreement to fund, as I've indicated earlier, the school maintenance projects on the Department of Education's list was significant, and we will see much of that work done this coming summer. This is the first administration, as I've indicated, working with the legislature to commit, again, funding all back maintenance for our schools. And again, I want to thank you. But there's more work that we need to do. I propose that we invest nearly $45 million of this year's additional revenue to start reducing the backlog of deferred maintenance in other state facilities as well. Now, my administration intends to work with you, all of you, with Ted, Lisa, and Don, in fashioning a plan to tell Alaska's story in the lower 48. I gave you a briefing on that in my state the other night. We will start with a more precise assessment of perceptions in the lower 48 and what information might assist in correcting these misconceptions as they exist in looking at Alaska. What we intend to do is to ask for an RFP to learn. I don't anticipate expending any money to get the RFP. Learn how to basically proceed with a national public relations effort. We'll evaluate the assessment of perceptions and the RFPs with you, the legislature, with our congressional delegation, with Arctic Power, before moving ahead. Now, I'd also propose having an experienced Alaska communication organization, or perhaps more than one, as part of this national effort. We would, of course, look to our major newspapers, our television, our radio outlets for their professional guidance. Some folks legitimately might ask, well, can we afford it? Well, the answer is, can we afford not to? Think of the estimated return to the state if ANWR had passed. That revenue was one half the estimated lease bids. The estimates were as high as $5 billion. A potential return of $2.5 billion to the state. That's a pretty good return on a national education effort that succeeds. Well, we all appreciate the high oil prices that have resulted in a significant increase in state revenues. We can't forget what that means to the ability of individual Alaskans to heat their homes. I made some promises at the AFN convention in Fairbanks in October. Tomorrow, I will introduce a supplemental request to fund a number of the programs that will help Alaskans this winter, including full funding for power cost equalization. Let's do it, ladies and gentlemen. Get it done. Adding state funds to increase the amount available to low-income Alaskans under the Federal Heating Assistance Program. And, again, providing funds to small cities to purchase bulk fuel. Now, because, depending on your point of view and where you're from, whether or not we're in the middle of winter, it's important that early action be taken on this so that assistance can get to those most in need when it's needed. And, secondly, we can pray for a mild winter. Now, I've already discussed with you how we are investing the additional FY06 revenues to advance a fund K-12 education, to save our ownership in the gas pipeline, to develop and complete local transportation projects and maintain state facilities. This is a very conservative responsibility and conservative use of those unexpected revenues that we have. Well, let's go through next year's operating budget and recognize that it's up. We have increases. And we have a chart for you, which hopefully will enlighten you as much as it has me. First of all, next year's operating budget is up, as I've indicated, because it includes the specific increases that I'll identify. $104 million for increased caseload and costs of the Medicaid program, which includes the bill to pay the $45 million costs for the Fair Share program, which started under a previous administration, but we have the obligation to pick it up. Unfortunately, the federal government rejected our claim on that particular fund, so that's $45 million. Secondly, $90 million for K-12 and $19 million for the University of Alaska programs. $65 million for increased salary and benefit costs for state employees, including legislative employees, that the legislature has previously approved. This includes $34 million for increased retirement system contributions and $33 million to operate and maintain Alaska's transportation system, our ferries, our airports, and so forth. So, gentlemen and ladies, it gives you some idea of where the increases are. And we all have a responsibility to review the adequacy of those increases and whether they meet the needs of our state. Now, quite naturally, goes with any increase the question of what does that mean with state employment. Well, we have another chart, and this is the last chart. And that's probably good news to all of us. But what we have here is a chart that indicates the number of new employees and to whom they bear the responsibility for service and payment. Now, there's 51 that are the programs that are paid for by federal government programs, and these flow all over the ballpark relative to the type of services that they may be, fish and game related, any number of things. But the point is 51 of these are paid for by federal funds. Then we have the protection of the public's health and safety, troopers and others that are required to assist the public, or areas in corrections as well. 37 new hires. Pioneers and veterans homes. As you know, we're opening the first veterans home in Palmer, and we have to staff that. And we're also increasing staff in some of the areas of our pioneers homes where we had floors partially vacant. We haven't been able to find the funds to hire the people to give the pioneers the type of intensive care that some of them need. Now, we also have what we call self-supporting, which are various grants and so forth that fund themselves. Managing state resources, 24, and that's in various departments associated with resource development permitting. Other programs associated with those that were required by legislation, 17, Alaska Hire, 15, and maintain roads, harbors, and so forth, 8%. So for those of you who, like Representative Coghill, who's always very conscious of, well, how many new employees you got? Why, there they are. So, ladies and gentlemen, please review them at your leisure. Now, retirement costs, as we've noted, are a substantial contributor to next year's budget increase. And we know that these costs will continue to escalate in the foreseeable future. We're seeing IBM, we're seeing General Motors, we're seeing major airlines, we're seeing other businesses change their retirement system from defined benefit plan to defined contribution plans for this very reason. Businesses and government around the country are facing a pension crisis, and Alaska is at the forefront of making the changes necessary to cope with that crisis. As you all know, it was a tough fight in this legislative body, extended a few days, but we did the right thing. And I'm proud of the work we did collectively last year on Senate Bill 141 to help corral the future costs of the state's retirement system through a defined contribution plan for new state employees hired after July 1st, 2006. What we were doing was consciously saving the plan. I'd particularly like to thank Senator Bert Stedman, Representative Mike Kelly, and others for the dedication and work. I could thank all of you, and I will at this time. Thanks for taking the lead on this. Now, employees under the new plan will have more control over their retirement and the portability of their plan, regardless of whether they make government service a career or not. While the change was controversial, as I indicated, it was the right thing to do. Now, during the last two sessions of the legislature, we successfully acted together to reform Alaska's workers' compensation laws. It was an issue, again, that many advised me was, well, it's too tough, Governor. Too tough to take it up. It's too late to take it up. Well, I think we all came together, and we proved them wrong, and we passed it, and we did the right thing. Because what's in it for Alaska's small business? Lots, okay? We took a step towards relying, if you will, reining in, I should say, in the increased medical costs, which is falling to employers, and the situation of additional costs are continually going up, and they have a tremendous impact on our health care community as well. We set up an administrative appeals board that will increase the speed with which decisions are made, providing constituency in these decisions. Now, all this should assist in addressing and arresting the cost of workers' compensation insurance. And I appreciate everyone's cooperation last year in getting this through the legislature. There's no turning back on these issues, and I think we'd all agree on that. And when I spoke before the Alaska Municipal League last November, I stated that I would again support the state covering local government's increased retirement system costs, just as we did last session. But I again challenged the AML, the Municipal League, to help identify how those reoccurring costs could be paid from a reoccurring fund source like the Amerada Hess, because this is a reoccurring increase. It is unwise, very unwise, to simply pay these costs from the general fund when you have no assurance of yearly contributions that can be satisfied in the future. Some folks even suggested that I was blackmailing the AML. Now, I don't know how anyone could take that seriously when we're only asking them to support good citizenship. Be a part of the process, be a part of the solution. Our responsible proposals that we came up with a couple of years ago, you'll recall, was an evaluation of the percent of market value, the POMV. And we proposed that two sessions ago. You'll recall in 2004, we convened the Conference of Alaskans in Fairbanks. I made recommendations regarding a fiscal plan for the state. As a result of this conference, I proposed for, one, the use of the percent of market value approach to manage the permanent fund. And I proposed to take it to a vote of the people. The idea was simple. Take 5% of the permanent fund's value each year, with half going to the dividend, with 45% going to education, and with 5% going to communities. Now, this approach, as you recall, passed the House, but it did not pass the Senate. We were doing a little evaluating and went back and reconstructed what would have been. Had my proposal been enacted in FY04, $1.8 billion would have been available to fund education. Nearly $200 million would have gone to communities around the state without touching one penny of the state's general fund. And over the last 2 years, Alaskans would have received each $2,080 in permanent fund dividends instead of $1,765. That's what might have been. And the permanent fund would have grown from $27.4 billion to $32.1 billion. Well, it was a great opportunity then. Ladies and gentlemen, it's still a good opportunity now. I'm going to have more to say about this later in the session as we're searching for answers and trying to find a renewable fund to meet our concern for the AMA and other sources as well. I believe this issue should really be put to the people of Alaska on the ballot. I believe Alaskans are willing to share a portion of the permanent fund to benefit the whole, and we should not be afraid to ask them. Now, I recognize that the unorganized areas of the state do not have the tax base to support the services that communities outside take for granted. As we work to determine how to appropriately assist local communities, we also must act for a commitment from unorganized areas to increase their own individual responsibilities. You know, we're the only state in the union not served by a comprehensive network of organized local government. So I would encourage you to join me in calling upon those communities to seriously evaluate organizing as political subdivisions. This is really the vision of our state constitution. This needs to be accomplished, really, if we're to achieve a reasonable balance between state financial support and local accountability and responsibility. I believe in this so strongly that I'm proposing a community dividend program by which funds will be made available to communities organized as either a municipality or borough. To further help, I'm also proposing to significantly increase the amount of state assistance to newly formed boroughs. I know the legislation under the leadership of Senator Gary Stevens and Representative Bill Thomas. They both worked on this issue. I look forward to working with you and others on the specific recommendations that you come up with. The other night, I spoke about how growing the economy will provide great careers and increase state revenues to fund public services. By completing the gas line contract, changing the oil tax system, and opening ANWR and NPRA, we will be reforming and transforming the North Slope of Alaska. The Statehood Act looked to natural resource development rather than taxes as the means by which Alaskans would pay for essential public services. Well, today and together, we've done a pretty good job to create the right climate for natural resource development. For example, we have reformed and modernized permitting, the only administration in recent years to turn the growing bureaucracy around in that area. We've established a permitting framework that protects the public interest yet reduces delay, needless costs, uncertainty, and litigation that all too often encumber responsible development of our resources. We've moved the Habitat Division from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game to the Department of Natural Resources, where it's doing a very responsible job of speeding up the permitting process while still protecting the environment. We moved the Division of Government Coordination from the Governor's Office to the Department of Natural Resources, where it's doing a fine job of improving the permitting process as well. Most recently, the Department of Natural Resources completed a significant overhaul of the Coastal Zone Management Program, which has just been approved by the federal government. And we are on schedule to assume control of wastewater permitting from the Environmental Protection Agency next year. With Alaskans running this important program, I'm confident we're going to see vast improvements in these areas in which permits are issued. And for FY07, I'm requesting funds to take on primacy for drinking water compliances. This will ensure that Alaska's public water system will continue to be regulated by the state and not the federal government. Now, since I've taken office, my administration has introduced and you have passed 3 key permit reform bills to revise and revitalize the state's environmental regulatory program. Together, we have eliminated permitting backlogs, reduced processing times, and made the rules more rational while improving pollution control and environmental protection. Our permit reform efforts are paying dividends, and check with any of the resource industries whether permitting today is more rational, faster, less wasteful, and more effective than it previously was. You'll get a response, and it'll be a favorable one. My administration is also proposing that the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities begin a pilot program offered to only 5 of the states. We will perform the National Environmental Policy Act function for the Federal Highway Administration. This should speed up transportation dramatically, particularly with the infrastructure projects. Now, we've also heard the concerns of a number of Alaskans, a good number, that allowing wastewater mixing zones in salmon spawning areas might threaten our ability to market our Alaska salmon. That's why the Commissioner of the Department of Environmental Conservation and I, in consultation with the Commissioner of Fish and Game and Natural Resources, have determined that the state will retain the current regulatory prohibition on mixing zones in salmon spawning streams. So our policy is balanced. On the one hand, we are streamlining permitting and the permitting system by removing unnecessary processing and delays, yet we are retaining the environmental protection necessary to maintain our resources and our way of life. Our permitting changes and other initiatives have results as well in the mining industry. I got a miner behind me. The Pogo mine has successfully completed its permitting, as you know. We managed to avoid some significant litigation as a result of our collective efforts. And with the help of a lot of folks, we were able to push back against some of the environmental attempts to stop that mine. There's 500 workers out there now completing the construction of the Pogo. We've worked with federal and state agencies to complete permitting on the Kensington mine near Juneau, which will create another 200 good-paying jobs. Again, there is environmental litigation, and again, we have intervened in support of the Forest Service and the mine. The state has done this intervention. Now, our expedited permitting effort, I think, has increased dramatically mining exploration and brought new mining companies to Alaska in an all-time record. The mining industry generated $1.6 billion in mineral products and exploration investment in our state in the year 2004. When we came into office, the salmon industry was having a little problem. It had been on a downward spiral for a number of years, and we set out to do something about it. I directed the $50 million in federal funds obtained by Senator Stevens and our delegation to revitalize the industry. We worked with the industry. But we required the industry to match dollar for dollar. It wasn't a grant. It wasn't a giveaway. The theory was simple. If the industry was willing to put up money into the project, half the money, that probably meant it was a pretty good risk, good candidate for state help. Now, our sustainable management approach, recognized as really the best fisheries management regime in the world, is now more visible than ever. They're coming to Alaska to try and figure out what happened to their fish. For only the third time, think about this, for only the third time since commercial fishing began in Alaska 127 years ago, Alaska's commercial fishermen harvested over 200 million salmon in 2005. We must be doing something right. While salmon is an important component of our fishing industry, it's also important that we in the state continue to work closely with the halibut, the cod, the pollock, the shellfish, the crab fishing industry as well. Now, my FY07 budget proposes to invest state funds in salmon stock assessment projects around the state. This will enable the department to improve and monitor the scientific basis of established escapement goals. I've also proposed funding to focus on the productivity of sockeye in the Upper Cook Inlet and the Susitna areas. I can't believe Bob Penny's catching them all down in the Kenai. Probably get in trouble for that one, but anyway. Now, moving to the timber industry, it's been in decline for some time since the closure of the pulp mills during the previous administration. But I'm determined to bring back this industry in support of timber-related communities, predominantly in southern southeast Alaska. The trees are there. You know, they burn more wood in New York for firewood than we are cutting commercially in the largest of all our national forests. We are preparing a memorandum of understanding with the Forest Service, calculated to have state and federal forest officials work together to make more economic timber available. The availability of economic timber and the supply will once again make southeastern Alaska attractive to open a sawmill, a veneer mill, or a fiberboard plant. And I want to take the opportunity to thank the Forest Service for its cooperation with our administration on this effort. I'm also proud of what my administration has been doing in protecting subsistence rights and managing our wildlife. I want an Alaska where we continue to be able to hunt and fish and use the outdoors just as early generations of Alaskans have done. We cannot guarantee the well-being of our wildlife without a successful predator control program. I will continue our carefully conducted and science-based program of predator control, and I will not be intimidated by threats of howl-ins or inaccurate reporting of our methods and approach by those outside Alaska. I think you know me well enough. You know me well enough to know I mean it. Now, preliminary results indicate that our program is working. But we need to continue it for several years to achieve our goals. I'm particularly pleased with the recognition by the Alaska Federation of Natives of the importance of our predator control program to enhance subsistence hunting. Copies of the AF of N and the Alaska Village Council President resolutions have been placed on your desk for your perusal. I appreciate your continued patience and support, because it's tough. My wife gets a lot of letters as we work to ensure that all Alaskans have the game resources they need to feed their families. I will also appreciate your support for the general funds that I have requested for the Wildlife Conservation Division to restore the mix of federal funds, fish and game funds, and general funds that have traditionally financed their work. The $3 million requested in my budget will enable the division to resume adequate levels of wildlife inventories and studies that will facilitate intensive management and maximum allocation to consumptive users. And our visitor industry has rebounded dramatically from 9/11, and we are proposing additional funding to assist with marketing. Last year, we funded the increased state contribution as a result of legislation that reduced the industry's match from 60% to 50%. This year, we are proposing additional funding to increase marketing to independent and international travelers. And we're seeing international activity in various areas of our state, up at Chena Hot Springs. Flights are directly coming in from Japan into Fairbanks. Things are happening we've never had before. An important issue for tourism is having access to destinations. And that's why we are supporting greater access to important destinations within Alaska. Denali is the number one visitor destination. As you know, there's one road in there. And it's quite an experience getting up 4 o'clock in the morning. So we have other proposals. Through the north, Stampede Road on state land, outside of the park until we get to the park preserve. Glacier Bay National Park, traditional ferry and cruise ship access. We want 2 ships a day. Wrangell-St. Elias National Park access as well, although we're doing a pretty good job there working with the various federal agencies. The Department of Health and Social Services is an important part of our responsibility as we legislate to work to strengthen families and communities throughout this state, particularly families in need. Important initiatives to strengthen families in this year include the Youth Success Initiative, which is an innovative approach to reach youth around the state who are at risk of substance abuse, suicide, or adopting criminal behavior. Another one that we all feel very strongly about is the Bring the Kids Home initiative that will return our children from behavioral health care in out-of-state residential facilities to Alaska and keep children in-state at community-based care facilities. Increased funding for substance abuse, FAS prevention that will save the future health of Alaskans and save funding on treatment. In recent months, we have been reminded of the challenge and basic responsibility of governments to protect the public health. And we have reason to be concerned. For FY07, we've requested funds for several important initiatives. These include infectious disease control preparedness, which includes the Public Health Division's ability to respond appropriately to public health emergencies, such as planning for pandemic flu, a bioterrorism preparedness. We've included $1.2 million for antiviral drugs as part of our preparedness in this state, ready to go. Now, this is in addition to constructing a very important investment in this area, the new virology laboratory in Fairbanks that you approved last session. You're never ready for an emergency, but we are preparing as best we can. Now, Alaskans should be assured that we are acting ahead of these potential crises. That's a responsibility of government and appropriate administrators. Our administration is going to go to whatever means is necessary to protect the health of our public. And tonight, I'm especially proud of the work of our criminal justice system. particularly the work of our Alaska state troopers. We've toughened bootlegging laws and alcohol seizures. They're up by 44%. In FY05, the troopers investigated 17 murders and resolved every one of them. In fact, for the past 3 calendar years, every murder investigation by our troopers has been resolved. Now, much of this success can be traced back to the work of the scientists in the crime lab. This year alone, the DNA profiles obtained from over 90 crime scenes across the state were matched to known offenders. Our capital budget proposes funding to plan and design an expansion of this crime lab so we continue to meet the needs of municipal and state law enforcement agencies. You know, there's been a lot of attention to the news about the devastating effects of meth, particularly in the Matanuska Valley. Now, to help stop this plague, 10 troopers have been assigned to a special investigation drug enforcement team. In 2005, nearly 6 pounds of processed meth was seized, a 48% increase from the year before. We've seen a 32% drop in the number of meth labs. Well, that's thanks to the partnership with the local police department, because this is the first reduction in 4 years. So we're getting through. And I think we'd all agree our troopers do a terrific job for Alaska and deserve our thanks and support of all of us. So please. Please join me as you have recognized Commissioner Bill Tandesky. Colonel Julia Grimes, you're already up. And Lieutenant Jim Hogg, and Trooper Chris Ooms, and Trooper Todd Mash. Thank you very much for the service you provide. Now, with this goes prosecution and judges. And judges cost money. So with more arrests and more prosecutions, more cases that go to trial, there's a huge backlog of criminal cases. Accordingly, I will be proposing to create 4 new Superior Court judgeships, 2 in Anchorage, 1 in Palmer, and 1 in Kenai. The results of our law enforcement efforts also mean that we are pushing the capacity of the state's correctional system. Accordingly, we will be moving forward with the Mat-Su prison as authorized in the legislation by Senator Lyda Green. I want this facility to house all of the state's prisoners who have extended sentences. That means we can bring in the professionals to provide rehabilitation and do a better job of it. Regional facilities will primarily house pre-sentence offenders and will be expanded if necessary as authorized. But I want you to get these figures because I think they're the type of figures that are so easily overlooked because it's a tough area. And it's a great responsibility, and we've been very fortunate. But I want to thank our 850 correction and probation officers who maintain the prisons and oversee the activities of 4,900 prisoners housed in Alaska and another 770 housed outside Alaska and 5,900 offenders on probation and parole in our communities that our corrections officers have the responsibility of overseeing. That is a big job. We have 4 of those officers who are with us tonight in the gallery. Prison Transportation Officer Michael Fisher. I assume you've been on the Department of Public Service jet once in a while in the prisoner home? Nod your head and say yes. Yeah. Correction Officer Michael Anderson, Correction Officer Sandra Boddy and Probation Officer David Wilson. And also with us tonight is the Commissioner, Mark Anthem. Mark, thank you. These are often our unsung heroes. Finally, and when I get to finally, my wife looks with some apprehension. But a guiding principle of my administration has been to stand up for Alaska and Alaskans and our relationship with the federal government, because I've had a little experience back there. This advocacy has several forms. I've had spirited conversations with officials at the Interior Department and other federal agencies about various issues affecting Alaska. And when necessary, I have directed the initiation of litigation to protect our interests. For example, the state brought a lawsuit against the federal government to confirm our traditional rights under RS 2477. Also, we've challenged expansive assertions of federal jurisdiction over marine waters, state-selected land, certain areas of navigable waters. And recently, the state proposed a land exchange with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to permit the construction of a road from King Cove to Cold Bay in order to create a safe and certain means of access for local residents. There have been far too many lives lost in aircraft accidents on emergencies in the winter. For the benefit of some of the Scottish cattle who have been out there for 100 years, we proposed a land exchange for Cherikov Island as well, and I could go on and on. We have advised the Interior Department that we intend to aggressively pursue selection of traditional lands, and these are additional lands in the sense, in the TAPS pipeline corridor, since most of these lands are not needed for right-of-way purposes. We have the right to get this land. It's part of our allocation. It's what we want to select, but the bureaucracy has been a little reluctant. In the Wrangell-St. Elias National Park, we've insisted that inholders there be given reasonable access to their inholdings, and I have indicated my desire to improve access into the northern part of the Denali Park Preserve. Furthermore, I've directed that access be improved to state lands on the northern side of the preserve via the Stampede Route. Further, we have insisted that Alaska's customary and traditional use of federal lands be understood and be protected in the implementation of ANILCA, a one-size-fit-all approach, maintaining from the Washington scene applicable in Alaska simply won't work here, and we have required, and there's been substantial effort to try and educate the federal officials and department heads that come into our state. In addition, we have advocated Alaska's interest in a number of federal decision-making processes, including the need for responsible oil and gas development in NPRA and the federal OCS. You're all aware of yesterday's announcement by the BLM adding 387,000 acres to oil and gas exploration. Ladies and gentlemen, this is big news for Alaska because this is the area that the state asked that they include. It's the area that the industry simply said there's a greater likelihood of finding significant reserves. And as you know, you know, that's the old saying, if you're going to look for money, look for a bank. If you're going to go out and look for oil, you want to go where it's most likely to exist, and that's what the industry has told us. Also, there's a necessity for the Environmental Protection Agency to recognize Alaska's social, economic, and environmental conditions as it considers new mines and other resource projects. This includes establishing a regional headquarters in Alaska, and we're going to continue to insist that that be done. Further, we feel that the federal agencies should recognize the uniqueness of our state, the traditional use patterns of our people, as they implement federal laws of general applicability. For me, preserving the rights and privileges contained in the Alaska Statehood Act is a sacred trust. So I ask that you join me in fulfilling that trust through the actions that we can take together. And I mean this, finally. Thank you, Ethan. This will be a historic session of this legislature. You know, decades from now, Alaskans will look back to see whether we got it right. Did we get it right on the gas pipeline? Get it right on the oil tax? Get it right on the expenditure of $1.2 billion of unanticipated revenue? They will ask whether we played partisan politics or did what was right for Alaskans. Well, I'm proud of our record of accomplishments together. Expect that we jointly will make those future generations of Alaskans proud, just like we are proud of the 55 delegates of the Alaska Constitutional Convention. So let us join together this evening in this session in the quest to achieve mutual contribution to the greater good of our state. It's flippin' sweet.
Senator Stevens.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the joint session stand adjournment.
Without objection, the joint session is adjourned.
President Coghill.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the House stand adjournment until 10 a.m. Friday, January 13th.
Without objection, the House will be in adjournment until 10 a.m. tomorrow.